I remember Coben saying something like, "You after excuse me, after practicing for 30 years or so, you can begin to speak about this practice." And Kensei Rinpoche also said, Dilgo Kensei Rinpoche said, that after 40 years, he felt like he had something to return to teach. These are both really well-practiced people. And I see in this group many people who have practiced 30 years or more, and stuff starts to bubble out, you know. So I think we have some new information coming from all those longtime practitioners. It's something to look forward to. Kind of a maybe a fine point, but be aware that you project the next moment. So what manifests is your own making. Sort of in the ultimate view, there's nothing happening. All this delusion arises through our projection and grasping, desires and dislikes. And part of it is sitting like this. Part of it is to bring that to an end, to let that subside, and see the gap in between this moment and the next. And the other is to see all activity is like, you know, the sunlight on dappled water. That type of activity arises from this thing we're drawn towards that we're not necessarily seen or awakened to, but we know it's there because it's what we arise from, and when we let it, it falls back and relaxes into the natural state of things, this suchness or Buddha mind or whatever word you have for it, God. One time here, a couple years ago, talking about, like, actually not really, even though the next day I was ostensibly going back to New Mexico, nothing really happened. It's like the scenery changes, but you don't actually go anywhere. And you'd just appear in a new environment, basically. Like your perception is such that the scenery has, oh, where am I? This place, so. Oh. And it, if you travel between moments, that's the feeling. Of course, it's not very practical. Took me about 2 weeks to come back, come down to earth where I could function again. But I think it's good to see that gap. And seeing that source of, you can appreciate each other more as manifestations of your capital S self. And I think it's somewhat important to see that because there's no no gaining idea then. There's no nothing created. Is there anything anybody else would like to add or have a question or something? Different topic.
So the gap. Can you use a file to widen it? Can you can we drive a mental wedge into it to enlarge it? Is there a side? Are there sides to the gap?
Maybe space is a better word than gap. And the thing is that some of you know this for sure, but don't, as you settle down, don't fall into mental dullness. It's not like some people call that the hinny honest way, sort of pejoratively saying, you know, you don't, like, you let your thoughts down until they stop, but that can be dull. So you want to have this lively presence to be, so there's awareness there, cognition of different than like I am observing. It's like you feel it here, maybe, and you feel it with your whole body, being present. And passing in this gap or space between things, on the other side you can see that the things that you passed between are no different than what the space. It's the same. All the same place, I guess you could say. Somewhat like looking out the window without naming anything, too. You can.
I don't know.
Like more deep, more experience, more.
More space.
More space, yeah. Well, arriving at the source, there's no more need. No more drive. It's accomplished, I guess you could say. Later, after some time, maybe you feel like you've rebuilt your world and you missed that thing. And then there's a kind of push to go back. I think that's why we all arrive here, actually, because we remember, but we're not sure what it is that we're feeling, what we're missing. And so we sit down and try and rediscover. So in that way, there's some push, you know. In the beginning, we have to push ourselves. That's what I was saying the other day when I came back to sitting after, I mean, sitting, but then I came back to it with a sense of relief rather than a sense of trying to attain anything. Mm-hmm. And that's where there was this just this sense of peace about sitting, and suddenly everything came together, like not no magical vision or anything, just past experiences, current experience. I realized they were the same, they were blended. And what's interesting is in Zen we don't talk so much about it's there, but you have to really like look closely for the instructions that my Tibetan practicing friends said, how is it? And I said, ah, like, ah. And they said, seed syllable of emptiness. And that's what, it was exactly right. Somebody else from that tradition, in the early days at Hokkoji, came and said, how do you experience this something or other? So you had some word, Sanskrit or Tibetan word. And I said, what is that? And he described it, and I went, oh, that's what you call it. So it's in our, it comes out naturally. It's all through many sustained practice. It's there, so you might not know what it's called, but you've experienced it kind of. And I heard a talk on the Jikoji website that you gave at some point. I don't know what year. I was trying to find the more current ones from the Shuso, this practice period, but I think I didn't find those, but I found one. And you described something Koven said of, it's these vows, chant we say at the end,
beings are numberless, they will save themselves.
Exactly.
Desires are infinite, they will find an end of themselves.
And this is coming from that point of this gap. Because you see that there's nothing other than this one mind, and all sentient beings are this one mind. There's nobody to save. Already, there's no distinction, nothing to save. Bob Watkins asked Koven what the purpose of a priest in our tradition. What's the purpose of being a priest? And he said, to offer the opportunity to sit. You all are doing a very good job. It's amazing coming here because there's still all these old timers still coming. Hokkoji, nobody knows, nobody met Koven, which is fine, but nowadays everybody's new to the practice. Well,
but then it happens, and well, why was I, so why was I putting out all this effort, you know, what was all that commotion about, right? I mean, I do that anyway, and I sort of think, well, you had to do all that, things like that's a necessary process. I mean, I know I read things that I'm hearing, it's just, you know, no effort, just, there's no effort to be made.
Yeah, but that's talking about a finer point.
Yes. Okay.
You have to put, if I come in the door, what should I do? You have to sit and face the wall and follow your breath, and that takes some effort. I have to get there and do these things. But when you get down to the point that you're talking about of things settle and you're present, then you let go of the effort too, because that's extra. Still remaining present, but without this self-centered awareness. So there's no separation between awareness of observing and the observing the thing that is being observed, shall we say. They merge together. And no sound of birds and no sound of the creek, just like in the Heart Sutra. Like the sound is there, the vibration of something happens, but it's not discriminated as to what it is.
But I felt what Cliff said about anxiety. You know, it's not the kind of anxiety that angst or deep, but there's a sort of a lost feeling that, where's my job? You know? what do I do? And then, you know, sometimes I do get kind of lost, and then other times.
But I would say, maybe we're talking about a nuance here, but it's the lost part, but without the feeling of lost.
Yeah. Sometimes you're just lost.
But I mean, you're present, and it's okay to be lost.
Yeah.
Like you're nowhere, reason to be anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. That's very nice.
Semi-retired.
So, a very different take on that, actually. It's just with this foot problem that just suddenly arose that fast. Being in here, it's interesting. Like, I'm no longer really concerned about my perfect Zen posture. I'm worried. I'm just trying to get comfortable. What am I aware of here?
My friends, Tibetan friends, are they kind of laugh at our posture. You know, it's like too rigid. You know, the right hand, the same posture, but the right hand's over the left, which feels strange after doing it so long. But mouth is open, eyes are up, more relaxed. So you can practice like that.
I just want to get comfortable.
Right? That's what I'm saying. You get comfortable.
I'm
and
going to be any more comfortable than this. You know? But thanks for the idea.
Is that, that's really what we're talking about here, right?
Same thing, yeah. That's Hongzhi's phrase for our way of sitting. And what's amazing about Hongzhi, I mean, and some of those guys who write those things down, it's like, oh yeah, just return to the center, follow the light and stay there, you know. Well accomplished.
But I liked it because I felt that
that's more leading up to it. The Hongzhi describes, I forget his exact words, but it's, you know, you polish, grind down things that are the kleshas, they call them, the obstructions to practice, whatever that is, the various graspings that you have, the problems I might have with Joe, you know, like I deal with them. No, just kidding. See if you're paying attention. We grind that down so it's, as you say, smooth, and we're not bothered by things, so that you can be present without keep going off or following this train of thought. That puts you in the position.
Sometimes when the zazen is new, it feels like you're after some kind of a feeling, and you're doing a little bit more active redirection. Follow the breath. There's something to do here. I think that Lance was saying. Sometimes there is also there's this feeling of not looking for a feeling, where you it's like more of a recognition that it was there already, that things are just happening on their own. And so it feels like not looking for a feeling, because whatever feeling happens to be going on is fine. So there's a sense of not really discriminating a relaxed feeling from an anxious feeling, or a happy one from a distressed one, but rather just this recognition that those things are all going on their own. So the word that always comes to mind for me like that is recognition, just recognizing that activity as just as your own nature. And it is relieving in the sense that all of a sudden there isn't so much to do. But what the other word that always comes to mind for me with that is generosity. And I think that was a topic of one of Val's talks back in October. And I always think of generosity as that feeling of not expecting a certain state to come out of the practice, but just being available to whichever things are happening. It's a generosity, you know. It's not expecting something back. It's just being there for it. And I still have to agree with Lance, though, that it's like not always there at the beginning. And sometimes when you're more in touch with it, you're wondering, why was I doing all that? Why was I doing all that stuff before?
Well, your description of the whatever you're feeling or whatever's going on, and anxiety or pleasure has its own life, is sometimes described as having its own sphere that it falls back to, in the sense of this original mind that has its place and it goes back to that. I mean, you don't need to address those things, as what you're describing is, I believe, correct. You just sit still without any attachment or nourishing these things. Just let them subside. Let them be.
Sometimes I almost feel like there's two awarenesses. There's one awareness of things that are comfortable and uncomfortable, and then there's another awareness of just all things. But then there's not really two awarenesses at all. But sometimes it feels like there is.
You've been coughing. Are you okay?
Yeah, I went to the doctor yesterday.
Okay, good.
They don't know what it is.
So you may not be okay.
They pointed to something on an x-ray. We don't know what that is. It's probably bronchitis.